You're about to hear a preview of Partially Examined Life supporter exclusive content. To learn how to get the whole thing, check out partiallyexaminedlife.com/support. Hey, you're listening to Partially Examined Life. It's still episode 378, the fourth part of it, the supporter-only part. Thank you for supporting. Just to finish the thing that were originally assigned for our 378 recording, which was a week ago today, but we still have this section left on feelings. That is section 15 in the Thomas Aquinas Selected Philosophical Writings from Timothy McDermott. Can we review a little bit from last time? Do we have an overall model of the mind? I mean, I know we talked about whether it's passive or active, and that's going to be relevant for feelings, which are passive. That's passio. They're defined as passive, being affected by something. But do we have any thicker model of the mind here?
Well, there's a form of passivity to the mind that does not involve loss. He wants to say that the mind has this kind of general relationship to objects such that they can actualize its potential, which I think is important. I think it has kind of an analog in neuroscience, right? For every experience we have, we get certain changes in the brain in the way synapses are related to each other. But it's interesting that for any possible experience, there is a brain state that could be had to encode that experience. Or at least I suppose that's true. So that's a way of getting at the kind of universal flexibility of the mind. Anything that, and here I guess we're talking about thought specifically, anything that can be conceptualized, the mind can do that. But there's an active way in which the mind is involved, and I think the brain science gets at that. But despite the fact that there's an activity to the brain, that activity is somehow a passivity. It's a receptiveness and openness to the world.
Isn't it also the case, though, that there's a structure in the brain that mirrors, to some extent, I don't want to use the word intentionality, because that doesn't happen for another 1,000 years or something, but part of what mind does is actualize potentialities, immaterial potentialities. The mind has objects in the same way that the senses have objects. It's directed. It's also simultaneously motivated. So it's active in the sense that it has a motivation, right, through will to actualize potentialities. And then it also, another characteristic of mind is that it works in conjunction not only with will, but with understanding. So it's one part of a much larger and more complicated structure of something, soul, human existence. I'm not sure, but
one more thing about the mind, the active part is the part that abstracts. He thinks that the forms aren't simply there to be in a noble way in objects, to be made noble. It's like we need to knead the clay a little bit. Whatever's coming in has to be abstracted. It's kind of a precursor to a much more modern idea where things are being constructed, right? As Kant does, except so where we are somehow producing the concepts. I think that's a very un-Aristotelian idea in a way. But for the section on the feelings, we're going to get similar sorts of questions, but with regard to feelings or passion, as he calls them, the passions. And the big question that we start off with in Article 1, can the soul be subject to the passions? It's a puzzle, right? Because the soul is thought to be immaterial and not changeable in the Christian and the Greek tradition. It's supposed to last forever, but passions mean susceptibility to change, right? We've got to be affected by something. Something's got to stamp itself on us and change our souls for us to be receptive. So we're back again to this problem of this kind of paradox of receptivity to the world. So how do we explain that?
Well, I was trying to get at just fundamentally, metaphysically, do we know what mind is? And I see at the beginning of the last section that we talked about, mind is an ability belonging to things immaterial in substance. So I think there's an assumption here that there is an immaterial soul. So he's maybe, you know, we didn't read specifically about this, and I know he has an argument, maybe we can even take it on in close reads, about how trying to do the same thing that we were trying to do in Aristotle, which is how could mind be merely the form of body and yet be immortal? And I remember Aristotle wants to leave room for that, but I don't think it's really completely essential. Like, he just wants to have some conceptual space, whereas Aquinas is obviously completely committed to the idea that the soul can exist after death. But yet he wants to get whatever you could get out of Aristotle's view and not have to just say straight up Aristotle is wrong about anything. Yeah, so mind is not a substance, it's an ability. And so all this talk that you were just reviewing on, is it passive? Is it active? How does it relate to, just like the senses, our abilities? There are organs involved, but you know, it's very natural for us to jump to, how can we interpret this regarding the brain? I don't know that we can assume or not assume that Aquinas knows what the brain is for, has this in mind.
Yeah.
My point of talking about the brain is just propedeutic. It's just an attempt to make it understandable. It's not a claim about him and the brain. But the reason why, yes, he thinks the mind is immaterial, but we have to keep in mind the beginning of the mind section, the beginning is the person that he's rebutting. And their point is that, well, the mind is immaterial and matter, there's got to be something material about receptivity, right? How is the mind receptive without being material? That's the paradox here in that section. Now, the paradox for passions is kind of inverted. How can we be receptive and yet have a stable identity or an eternal soul, however you want to think of this, but we can cast it in more terms that seem to us more realistic.
Right.
So how do we have feelings if the soul is immaterial
and doesn't change? Yeah.
Not changeable. You know, once again, he gets into these different senses of passion, the three senses.
And of course we want to, this quote from Paul, allow in some sense that souls can be affected by sins, for instance, sinful passions. So we want to retain, I think he would identify that with the sort of pre-philosophical everyday understanding of this, but yet understand that in a deeper way, give it a more technical reinterpretation.
The stuff that refers to the Bible in here, I think listeners might get the wrong impression that it forms some large part of the text or that it is critical to his argument. These are like little throwaway fortune cookie things along the way that he litters the argument with along the way. And part of the reason is because his interlocutor is quoting the Bible and saying, well, but can you be a good Christian and really believe this stuff? And he's got to say, well, yeah, I'm doing Aristotle, but also let me throw out, Paul said this, and what I'm arguing for is not sacrilegious, and then I'll get on to the abstract argument.
Yeah. If you believe that the Bible is like revealed truth, this is like a data point. Because in the Bible, it said, this authority said, hey, you know, passions are blah, blah, blah. Or you could, like you said, see it as a sop to Christians who might be afraid that he's relying too much on pagan authorities.
The Bible doesn't prove anything for him.
He's not justifying it. He's not here like trying to justify what's being said. He's just saying like, here's something that somebody we should trust says. So
it's what he's going to prove is not inconsistent with the Bible. Right. It's not that the Bible is part of the proof. But if he made a proof and then it were inconsistent with the Bible, that would be another problem. So he has to do both of these things. So what are the different senses of passion here?
Well, we have a simple acquiring, as in sensation and understanding. So is a passion merely like seeing red, where then the sense organ acquires, however it does mechanically, maybe it turns red, maybe it somehow gets the data some other way. Is that how a passion works?
If that sounds like the kind of thing that you want to hear more about, then please go to partiallyexaminedlife.com/support. Thanks for listening.